quickly.
Everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show. It's a very special episode because I am joined by not one, but both of the co-hosts of the Great Dorking Out podcast. Joining me for the first time on the show is Sonia Mansfield. Hi, Sonia.
Hi, I'm super excited.
I'm excited to have you. And returning to the show, her co-host on Dorking Out, Margo Donahue. Hi, Margo.
Hey, guys.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Now, I know I only said Dorking Out, Margo, but you're on seven different podcasts. So maybe now would be a good time to plug all of those. We got Book versus Movie. We've got, is it Best Neighbors?
The Best Neighbors podcast, yeah. the Fit Bottom Girls podcast, if you're into health and fitness, and the Not Fade Away podcast, which is my music podcast.
So if you're listening to a podcast, there's a good chance Margo is hosting it.
And Sonia and I actually might have a surprise for you guys too in the future. Just keep that tucked away.
We love the sound of our own voice.
Yes.
What's going on over at Dorking Out?
Well, today's episode, actually it's not today because you guys will be listening to this on Wednesday. So this week's episode is The Devil Wears Prada, which was really, really fun to talk about. And Margo's got a lot of really great stories to go along with that one. And I think next week's episode, we're going to talk about Fletch.
That's so right.
That will be really fun.
Very nice.
You know, Margo and I kind of met through F This Movie. Do you know that?
I don't know if I did.
Okay, because it's very well established. I'm a very big fan. And so I've been listening to your show for a while, and you had Margo on, and I thought she was so awesome. And I was like, that chick fucking gets it. And so I tweeted to her, and I was like, you are on point, lady. You get it. And then we just started following each other, and then we were just like tweeting to each other. And then I asked her to come on one day, you know, on my show, and she did, and we clearly like connected that I just had to get rid of the other host and make her the co-host.
Well, that was very fun to see her be like a regular guest host, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, now she's just the co-host.
Yes.
Well, that makes me happy. I'm glad when good things happen as a result of F This Movie, because it happens so rarely. I look forward to the new podcast, This Chick Fucking Gets It, with Margo Donahue.
Oh my god, that's the best title. Write that down. I'm mailing that shit to myself.
You need to email that shit to yourself. I would listen to the shit out of that podcast.
So when you guys were coming on, we were trying to think about, well, what can we talk about? And I tried to think of something sort of dork themed, and then the idea was pitched, perhaps Revenge of the Nerds. So that's what we're going to be talking about this week, and it should be interesting because I tried really hard not to just come at Margo with like another romantic comedy, because that's kind of been every time she comes on the show, we dismantle some beloved romantic comedy and talk about like
so mad at us.
Yeah, I know. Like, this movie is fucked up. I can't believe we liked this. So now we're just going to do it with a regular comedy, not a romantic comedy, and just dismantle Revenge of the Nerds. But before we do, I will start the show the way I always do by asking both of you, have you seen anything good lately? And whoever wants to go first, please go first.
Margo, go ahead and go first.
Okay, so I saw Us, the other day at Alamo Draft House, and I absolutely loved it. I know I need to see it two or three more times so I can get all the references in there, but I completely adored it. I thought it was great. And then I went a few hours later and I watched something really kind of shitty, which was on Netflix called The Dirt. And it's the Motley Crue story. Oh,
that's on my list, actually. But now that you're telling me it's crap, maybe I'll skip that.
I think you should see it, especially if you've read the book, but it's pretty filthy and it will leave you with a little bit of despair. I mean, maybe think about that before you check it out or think about it a little bit more. And then,
you know, I didn't read the book, Margot.
I totally did.
I totally own it still.
Me too.
I bought it when it first came out and it's on my shelf and I got rid of a lot of books. I have an affection for really shitty biographies and autobiographies anyway. And I just fell in love with the style of this. And the movie captures some of it, but it's directed by the person that directed Jackass. And there's times where we're supposed to walk away. Like, I think they think they're the monkeys or something. Like, they're just madcap and silly. And it's like, no, you're all just garbage people. And I'm so glad not to know any of you. I think maybe Mick Mars is not so bad because he has a disease that stops him from doing the things they do. I wonder about that. But, I don't know. I'd be interested, actually, to hear what you both thought of it. And then last night, I just happened upon the movie Sweet November, and it's
Keanu
with
Reeves?
Anthony. No,
not the
not
remake.
That version.
Oh, my mind goes right to Keanu.
Well, we all love Keanu, like for sure. But this was on TMC, so it was Anthony Newley and Sandy Dennis.
Yeah,
and she plays a woman that has a disease, and she has little time to live, so she dates a guy for a month, and so she has a guy. Not kidding you, 1968, and this disease apparently makes her very dewy and lovable.
Like all
I can't
diseases.
Find anything wrong with her. Yes, she looks totally fine to me, but supposedly she's on a lot of pills.
You know,
it's going to go soon.
If I was dying, I don't think I would want to spend my remaining time dating. Just going out
dating.
On a limb there.
Oh, yeah. It's the worst. It's a terrible idea.
Especially a new relationship. How awkward is that?
Every 30 days.
Do I wait a week to call? That's literally a fourth of my life.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that The Dirt was directed by the same guy who did Jackass. Now I really want to see it.
You should see it. I'm not going to distract you guys. Definitely check it out. But I'm telling you right now, you're going to want to cover your face or hit fast forward a few times because there's some stories that come directly from the book that I wish I could unsee.
Okay. Is there a part where they take like toy cars and shove them up their butts?
No.
Disappointed.
And they're not shitting in toilets and stores or anything like that.
Do they have does the snorting the fire ants story make it into the show?
Oh, it includes urination.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yes.
Ooh,
yeah.
Great.
Oh, it's delightful. I know.
I have a random story about Jackass. Can I sidetrack for 1 second?
Always.
I used to work for a newspaper. I was the TV critic, and they let me review a movie one time, and they let me review Jackass the movie because the movie critic didn't want to do it. He's like, that shit's beneath me. Just send the TV critic. So I went and saw Jackass the movie, and I thought it was really, really funny and gave it like 5 stars, and they never asked me to do another review again.
You know.
And now my name is on the DVD box.
That's amazing.
It says, like, you know, I never laughed so hard in the theater. 5 stars.
They'll never let me review again. Sonya Mansfield.
Yeah. It's true.
That's so,
so
cool.
You're welcome, Jackass.
Yeah. I remember going to see it with my wife, and halfway, maybe 3/4 of the way through the movie, a group of people walked out. It was like, what? what was the straw that did it? You know? Because I don't even remember it being anything that awful. It was like, really? This is the one that broke you and now you have to leave? Very strange. Like, why did you come to this movie if you didn't know what you were in for?
They were very disappointed. They thought it was a romantic comedy or something. Wow, the plot of this movie is terrible.
Really hard to follow. Sonia, have you seen anything good lately?
I have. I went and saw Us as well.
Oh my God. I'm the only one who hasn't seen it.
It's what? It's, you should run right out and see it. You should stop recording right now and go out and
I
see it.
I feel like that would be rude.
Yeah. He's Margo and I'll just keep going. We'll wait for you. We'll wait for you.
Believe me, we can.
It's really, really great. And like Margo said, I need to see it a few more times, and obviously I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's so much to dig into on that movie. And I like movies like that where you see them and you're like, oh, I want to go back and read all the things. And that's how I felt about Us. And it's creepy AF. I really, really liked it.
I've already seen a headline that says, you haven't seen Us until you've seen it twice. It's like, motherfucker, I haven't seen it once. Like, why are you putting
it? Just came out.
I'm already two behind. Oh.
It's crazy how fast we're all supposed to see things and digest them and have our hot take.
An opinion.
I think it's really great, but I know that I will like it even more when I see it again. But I can't go twice in one weekend. I have responsibilities. I have a life.
Well, since you haven't really seen it until you've seen it twice, neither of you have really seen it. So we're basically all on the same page, I feel like.
We only half saw it, you guys.
Yeah. Oh, well. Then no, I haven't seen anything good lately.
You guys might make fun of me, but so yesterday Erica and I spent the day at this event called the Sci-Fi Spectacular here in Chicago, which was all day science fiction movies, and they play a little loose with that term because like Phantom of the Paradise was one of the movies, which is one of my favorite movies, but not a science fiction movie. I don't care. I got to see Phantom of the Paradise on the big screen, but I saw for the first time, I had never seen it, Time After Time.
Oh, with Christopher Reeve?
That is Somewhere in Time. Is Malcolm McDowell playing H.G. Wells, who goes back forward in time to find Jack the Ripper.
Mary Steenburgen?
Yes.
Yes, I've seen that. That's a good movie.
It was really good. I felt like a fool for having never seen it.
I've never seen it. I feel like a fool.
Well, I haven't seen Us, so I feel like...
Neither have I, apparently.
We're kind of in the same place. Yeah, I mean, as much as I'm like, hey, you should totally check out this movie from 1979. You should totally check out this movie from 1979. It's very good. It's written and directed by Nicholas Meyer, who did Star Trek II, the best of all of the Star Trek things. And it is just, again, takes kind of a ridiculous high-concept premise, but... is really, really good and probably the most charming and likable Malcolm McDowell has ever been in a movie, because he's usually kind of a scary creep. But
yeah,
he comes off really, really well.
Well, I'm going to add that to my list. And I know people say when they are going to add things to their list, they don't really have a list. I really have a list and I'm going to add that to my list.
It's good. And then the other one that I'll talk about very briefly is The Inventor. The new documentary on HBO, Margo, I thought maybe you had seen that.
Yeah, I had seen that. I'm kind of obsessed with all of it, including her voice, like everybody's talking about.
Oh, her voice is insane.
She sounds like a stone surfer. You know?
Can you do it, Margo? I want to hear an impression.
Yeah. All you're going to need is a little pile of blood, and you're not going to have to break through the veins. And her and Errol Morris fangirling on each other.
Yeah, that bummed me out.
They take him down too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of an Errol Morris fan, and then watching him be complicit in all of it, I was like, oh, yikes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know much about that case, and I feel like a fool because I guess I should have. As soon as it started, Erica was like, oh, I remember all this. Yeah, I totally know what this is. And I had no idea where any of it was going or what the story was, so it was all kind of new to me, and I thought it was super interesting.
Did you listen to The Dropout? That's the podcast from ABC News.
I did not.
That's all about this. Yeah, you should listen to it. It's like 6 or 7 episodes, and it dives a little bit deeper, but all of the main players are there. I just loved the Stanford professor that was her advisor that just saw through her bullshit a mile away.
Yes.
You could just see the contempt on her face. Like, ugh, I had to talk to this loser.
Margo, you co-host The Dropout, yes? That's one of your 7 podcasts.
Yes, it's very tiring.
It has to be. How do you find podcasts to listen to that you're not on?
I don't know. I can't tell you guys. I find the time.
All right. Are we ready for Revenge of the Nerds?
I think I am.
I know I am.
Is anyone ready for Revenge of the Nerds?
No.
So this is going to be a really tricky conversation, and not for the reasons that people might think, because I am so of two minds on Revenge of the Nerds, because I know that in 2019, there is a lot of stuff in Revenge of the Nerds that is hashtag problematic. There mm-hmm. is too much sexual assault, and there is homophobia and racism, and there's all kinds of stuff that is like, oh, this is offensive. This doesn't work anymore. You know, this might have played in 1984, but it does not now. And perhaps we should have known better, and we didn't. Aside from all of that, which is a big aside, I recognize I'm taking a big leap there. if you can excuse all the stuff that's bad and offensive, I like this movie and think it's good.
I think it's funny. I still think it's funny. I know the things that are wrong with it, and there's some stuff I can't look at very well, but I think some of the jokes and some of the side gags are still hilarious. I think the performances are really good. When I was a kid, I watched this movie. It made me want to go to college and party and and be a part of all that. I don't know. I agree with you. I mean, I think it's still a strong movie. It's just got a lot wrong with it. So you have to sort of, like Animal House for me. Like, I just kind of put it in that category. Like, you have to balance it out.
Yeah, one of the things we've been doing over at Dorking Out is we've been revisiting a lot of movies from the 80s and 90s that we super loved when we were younger, and some of them just don't age well, and then you still have this affection for them because you loved them so much. And Revenge of the Nerds is one of those movies for me, so I'm kind of glad we're not just gonna shit all over it.
Right.
I actually watched this movie a lot when I was younger because, surprise, I was kind of a nerd and I really could relate to that. And the this is awful, but the racism, the homophobia, and even the sexual assault, that shit did not register with me when I was 13.
No.
So I just watched it over and over and over because I was a nerd, and I was like, oh, they're nerds like me. So there's parts of this movie that still make me laugh really hard. But
yeah.
But watching it now, it's obviously like really rapey and really racist and really homophobic. But there's some really good parts in this movie.
It's a weird thing because I can watch an old Fred Astaire movie where he will put on blackface and
yes.
do this horrible racist number. And you're like, yeah, but that was the time. And, oh, it sucks that it's in here. And, oh, what a racist past our country has. But I'm able to recognize it for what it is, right? But it does
right.
seem like that line kind of gets drawn at the 80s. And once we get to the 80s, it's like, well, people should have known better. Because I feel like sort of culturally we have now said Revenge of the Nerds, damn you should have known better. And yes, of course, they should have known better, you know. But like, I didn't recognize a lot of that stuff in the movie either as a kid. A, because I was a kid, and B, because we were surrounded by it. I mean, it was these
right.
were the jokes that were in all of the movies. So,
I mean, this is the same year that 16 Candles came out, and 16 Candles is like the same thing. It's got a horrible like Asian stereotype. It's got date mm-hmm. rape. It's the same kind of thing. At least, I mean, that one's actually geared towards young people, and this one in theory is supposed to be geared towards adults, but
right.
the humor's totally 13-year-old boy. And it's just how it was. It's exactly what you said. We're surrounded by it, so it just didn't register as anything. This wasn't an outlier movie. This is like
right,
totally
they, right.
what they were
they
all like.
They weren't going out of their way to be like, let's be as awful as we can. They were sort of
no.
keeping with the times. And that, yes, that says some terrible things about the times, but I just have a hard time. I don't know. I watch this and it's bad. Like, those scenes are uncomfortable and ugly. And do I wish that this same movie had been made where, like, oh, the revenge that the nerds get in the title doesn't involve sexual assault? Yes, I wish that their revenge did not involve sexual assault. But I also don't want to just throw out the nerd baby with the nerd bathwater and say that the movie is worthless, because in 1984, they weren't making a ton of movies about these characters. You know, these characters were the outliers in every other movie, and they were the butt of every joke in every other teen comedy. And I think in a lot of ways, Revenge of the Nerds is ahead of its time. I mean, I don't, you know, I know people have strong opinions about The Big Bang Theory and wish it didn't exist, but a show like that probably would not exist if not for something like Revenge of the Nerds. We've come so far that now, you know, they these sort of nerd characters are beloved and embraced. In 1984, that was not the case.
Well, I would also just, I want to just disagree with you just a little bit, only because I'm a few years older than you. So I actually saw this in a movie theater as a teenager, and we really didn't know this was bad. The kind of misogyny that you saw on MTV was everywhere. Like, going back to, I guess The Dirt is proving to be very instructive, but the attitude of treating women like they go into categories and either they're really sweet and like your mom, or they're sluts or whatever, that was already out there. And nobody argued it. Nobody questioned it. It really was so internalized and normalized that it, you know, of course I wish it wasn't in this movie, but I totally knew it was. I saw it and I was young and I still kind of went along with, like, oh yeah, well, that's just what happens. You're a bunch of pretty girls in a sorority and you're snooty. Well, somebody's going to come and take revenge on you. And, like, nowadays I'm horrified by it, but I really don't think they weren't trying to be assholes. I think they really were going with the conventions of the time.
Yeah, for sure. That's the thing. And so, and when it's a little bit more removed, I think, from our current times, we're able to say, and maybe that's because, you know, we are remembering being around for this now. And so there's a little bit of shame that we carry for, like, once being okay with this. And so now we're trying to rectify that by saying, ah, but it's not okay. Whereas when we watch Holiday Inn or something and they do the insane racist number in that movie, it's like, oh yeah, but that was before our time. We're removed from that, so I can recognize that for what it is. I was not party to that. Whereas Revenge of the Nerds, this was spoilers, I think the first rated R movie I ever saw without my parents' knowledge or permission. It was for sure the first, like, naked people I'd ever seen in a movie. I was way too young when I saw this movie at a friend's house during a sleepover.
Okay.
So clearly it's a very formative movie for me.
You don't forget your first nudie pic.
No, no. And yet it never inspired me to install cameras in a girl's locker room or anything like that.
No. And it's all played for laughs. I mean, this is a comedy, we have to remember. I mean, all of it's done as a goof, but I don't know. At the time, I thought it was hilarious. I thought the whole jock strap thing was hilarious. And
well, that is
that's hilarious. Actually, that is, I think that's pretty amazing. But yeah, I thought Lamar was, like, a fun character. Now they make, I realize I watch, I'm like, oh, they made him so lispy with the wrist and everything like that. But at the time, a, you know, a gay character being accepted by everybody was actually kind of revolutionary. I mean, there's reasons why this movie stands out.
In some ways, I feel like, I mean, it's certainly not revolutionary, but I do appreciate the fact, it's such a hard argument to make. So, because I'm not excusing the characterization of Lamar or the stuff about the javelin at the end of the movie, but it's not like, I feel like, yes, the laughs come at the expense of the character's sexuality in terms of how he's played as a massive stereotype. But I don't think there are jokes being made in the movie about the fact that he's gay.
No.
Does that distinction make any sense, or am I backing myself into a weird corner?
No, I think that was my point.
Sense. Yeah.
That was my point. You know, he was a strong character. He was unapologetically gay. He was totally fine with who he was. And that was different for the time.
And they were all fine with it, too. They don't care.
Yeah, nobody questioned it. Nobody cared. Nobody said, like, oh, I'm not going to room with him. Nobody did. And that's actually a big deal.
Because there are those scenes. I recently, they cover this movie recently on 80s All Over, which is one of the few podcasts that Margot has not yet begun to co-host. But I say not yet because they're only halfway through the decade. She still has time. But and they tried to talk about, you know, there are things that are ugly and not okay. But one of the things that I think Drew McWeeny pointed out that he really liked, one of the scenes, was where the Omega Moos, which is, of course, you know, an ugly name, are brought in to the party. And at first, everyone's like, ugh, yuck. And then pretty quickly, everyone's having a great time. And he said that was a really great scene, he remembers, because, again, it has to do with letting go of your preconceived notions and realizing that, like, oh, hey, we're just – everybody's cool and we're accepting and everyone's going to have a great time. So there are those things in this movie. I do think that it practices what it preaches in terms of its message of tolerance. It's just – a little too tolerant of things like sexual assault and racism.
Yes. I think when I was younger, the reason the sexual assault didn't register with me was because she's totally fine with it.
Well, right. The movie, right.
Which is so weird. So weird. Like, you tricked me. I thought I was having sex with my boyfriend, and it turns out to be this nerd that I've been rejecting for the entire movie, but now I'm in love with him.
It literally transforms really her as a person. I mean, yes, right. She is a different person because, you know, if you just get fucked good enough by a nerd.
I know. It's true. That's how I met my husband.
No, she becomes dickmatized.
Yeah, exactly.
When she has sex with him, all of a sudden everything's changed. Her whole worldview has changed. But that was like, that was the time. I don't explain it. I wish it wasn't there too. Cause I wish she had like a moment to be upset,
right.
But she just immediately like, yeah. Oh, this is like laying on top of her and everything's like, oh, this is cool.
Like, what about a scene where the mask comes off before they fuck and then she decides to have sex with him anyway and then right. really yeah. likes it. Like, you know, like not after the fact. And that part bums me out, not just because it's criminal, but also because, which is, you know, plenty good reason to object to it. I'm sure there are better examples of this in pop culture, but in the back of my head, the one that I always go back to is the end of Teen Wolf, where Scott wins the big game and finally, I think her name is Pam. She finally is willing to date him even when he's not a werewolf, because now he's the big basketball hero. And so she goes to hug him and he kind of shoves her aside and he goes and finds Boof, who is his true love, because of course she is. And
her name is Boof.
Exactly. So it's that case of like, oh, you only like me for this reason. I'm going to push the popular person aside for the person who has been here all along and who I really like. And Revenge of the Nerds kind of gets that wrong. Like, he shouldn't end up with Betty at the end of the movie. She's been awful to him. He should like end up with that girl that he hooked up with at the party.
Right, it was totally cute.
Yes. So
my husband asked me, I watched this with my husband, and he's like, what happened to her?
Right? They clearly...
Like, why did you see her again?
They connected. They both seemed to have a good time. He wasn't wearing a mask when they had sex, which I feel like is already an advantage.
Maybe. Well, right. They don't show it.
That's true. I mean, maybe it's like a thing that she's into. But yeah, it would have been nice to bring back somebody like... somebody like that instead of somehow redeeming Betty as being worthy of his love when she is not, because she's been terrible to him the entire movie.
Well, he got his revenge by raping her.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Yeah, good job. And actually, all these nerds get their revenge as they will all invent like a social media platform that'll destroy the country. It's fine. They're going to get their revenge.
Do you guys have a favorite character in the movie?
I like Lewis. I like Lewis a lot. I mean, I like the laugh and everything like that. I don't like the part where he gets rapey, for sure. But when he's not doing that, he's a very warm, inclusive person that tries to help people come out of their shell. And He's very open like that. I really like Lewis a lot. I don't know. And Booger cracks me up.
Okay, so I wrote down in my notes that Judy and Gilbert were my favorite. But my husband will tell you that Booger is probably my favorite. That I laugh.
Booger
every
gets
time.
Some great laughs.
Every time Booger showed up, I started laughing.
That belching scene is hilarious. When he does that long belch, I still crack up.
Just when Stan and Betty ride by on their motorcycle, and they're like, "Look at what he's done to the house." And Booger's standing there, and of course Stan's like, "What are you looking at, nerd?" And he says, "I thought I was looking at my mom's old douchebag that's back in Ohio." I laughed really hard.
Booger is like an outlier even among the outliers, because you look at him and you're like, "Well, I don't, he's not a textbook nerd." I look at everyone else and I'm kind of like, "Okay, I get it. I mean, Lamar obviously is sort of presented as an other because of both his race and his sexuality for 1984. I'm not saying he should be, but I'm saying that's how the movie presents him. But Booger is like, Booger is like Gonzo. Booger is like, well, what is he? You know, like, okay, Kermit's a frog, Fozzie's a bear. What's Gonzo? And that's Booger. But yeah, he's the absolute best. He's
They have to say he's a nerd because the title is called Revenge of the Nerds. They can't call it Revenge of the Social Outcasts.
Right, exactly.
Right, or sociopaths. I like the scene where they're talking about they have to get dates for the dance, and he just says, "I've been combing the high schools all day." That so always cracks me up. It's gross, but it cracks me up.
But it's funny.
It's hilarious. Really, it's a great line.
I really like UN Jefferson too. Bernie Casey,
he's always great.
Yeah.
I really liked his scenes, and I liked when the jocks come and, like, you know, the metaphors are not subtle in this movie with, like, they're like burning the nerd sign, or they like release the pigs at the party. And I just like that Bernie Casey's there and sees, like, oh, these guys, they're discriminated against. And I do like it at the end when he shows up, because apparently the coach and all the jocks are afraid of black men.
Well,
like, black men to scare everybody.
But I like Bernie Casey a lot.
If not for the score that kicks in when Bernie Casey and his guys show up, I feel like that scene could be 75% less racist. But they put in that horrible, like, "And now some jive." It's like, get it? They're black and therefore terrifying.
Yeah. That part too made me cringe.
It's like a pack of big black guys. You know, when people always talk about, you know, big black, he was a big black guy that was really scary. They have like 12 of them that show up. Yeah.
I really like that, Margot, you mentioned Lewis. I like that Lewis is super confident from the very beginning. There's none of this, like, where he has to learn to be confident. Like, he is, again, unapologetic for so much of the movie, and Gilbert is sort of the more timid, like, let's just stay in our lane. And Lewis never has that, and I just like... There's something so winning about how Robert Carradine plays him as just like, this is me. And he's a hard character not to love. Again, rape aside. We have to characterize everything we say with, like, okay, if not for
it wasn't for the rape.
Or the panty raid, that whole thing where
that's
the camera.
More sexual assault. Right.
Yes. That's creeper shit.
It's that scene in, you know, again, Porky's was a giant hit and has a whole scene where they're looking through a peephole at girls in the showering. It helps, too, that, like I was telling you guys right before we started recording, I had just watched this movie, and because my kids were nearby, not in the room, so don't call DCFS, but I fast-forwarded through the panty raid scene and the subsequent watching of the video, and I fast-forwarded through the sex on the moon scene. So, like, the two really offensive kind of sexual assault beats are not fresh in my mind. All the other stuff is. So if I'm sounding a little bit more accepting of this movie, it's because I didn't watch those scenes. It's like watching Cannibal Holocaust without the animal cruelty scenes. It's like, oh, well, this movie's not so bad, right? You just skip over the really gnarly shit, and what you're left with is like, this is pretty okay.
But this showed on years for years and years and years on Comedy Central. And they kept all that stuff in. I mean, they just took out the boobs, but everything was in there. Like I said, it was like normalized. Like it was just like this classic movie and everybody went along with it.
There's a lot of random things in this movie where I was like, like even the beginning where like Lewis and Gilbert are carrying their trunk and all the alpha betas are at their party and Ogre's got this kid that he's holding like over the rail. I was like, oh my God, he just full on murdered someone in the first like 2 minutes of the movie.
He's a football player. He can.
Yeah, he just gets away with it. You know, I'm pretty sure Brett Kavanaugh was an alpha beta too, by the way. It seems like he was.
Oh, absolutely.
I like beer.
So there's that. And then, like, you know, of course, they have to, like, win the carnival to, like, take over the Greek council. And there's this thing where they're, like, taking laps on tricycles and they have to chug a beer. And, you know, I started laughing. I was like, oh my God, all those people are going to get alcohol poisoning. All of them.
Oh, what about the beginning when they have the frat party and they're diving into the pool of beer and it's stair diving?
Yeah.
And they just dived. I'm like, oh, well, that one's a quadriplegic right now. That's what's going through my head. I was young when I saw this, and same thing with the dirt. Like when I was young, I was like, oh man, when I grow up, I'm going to party. I'm going to party, party, party.
I've always thought that looks like a nightmare. No, I don't want to go to that party ever.
No, and it turns out I'm a total introvert and I hate those things and I can't wait to leave them. So that's so funny. Anyway.
I like all the stuff with the Olympics at the end where it sort of pays off the fact that they're quote unquote nerds, where they're coming up with ways for Takashi to drink everything and not absorb any of the alcohol. And again, if it weren't so offensive, the way they designed the special javelin for Lamar, you know, like where it's like they have an advantage specifically because they're nerds. It's not about we don't get the training montage where they learn to be just as physically capable as these jocks. Yes. It's like, or even the tug of war scene where they just let go and say, you win, fuck you guys. Where it's just about humiliating them. I like all that stuff, and I wish I could have even handled some more of it. And it, you know, listen, that big musical number that they do at the end, like, of course they should win. That is the greatest thing ever.
It's awesome. It's awesome. I love every bit of it.
I love it, too. It's true. That's one of the good things about the movie. I like that they're so smart and that they win by being smart. And one of the other movies that we were pondering talking about was Real Genius. And that's another movie that I super love, that I just love how smart they are. And they just use their brains. And that's how they achieve their goals, I guess, is that they're smart.
And much less rapey.
Yeah, there's hardly any rape in Real Genius.
But Michelle Merrick is in both.
I know. And I love her, by the way. I think she's great.
I love her, too. Every time she shows up in an 80s movie, I get so excited. And she's cute in this movie, but there's, I mean, it's impossible to beat Jordan from Real Genius. Like, she's one of the great 80s movie crushes of all time. She's fun in this movie, but in Real Genius, she's like next level.
Oh, she's adorable.
Everybody drink. We say that a lot on the podcast. Whenever we say adorable,
you have to drink.
One of our listeners started a drinking game where every time we say adorable, he drinks. So now it's a drinking game. For people who don't listen, that's why. Why we said everybody drink. We're not drinking right now.
I also think Ted McGinley's really good. He always played a great preppy shithead in everything he did. I think he's a great villain.
He just looks like it.
Yeah.
He's just made for the part.
Well, I don't understand, too. How is he? So he's on Happy Days in the 70s. He's in Revenge of the Nerds in the 80s. He's on Married with Children into the 90s.
Right.
But, like, always Ted McGinley. Is he a Highlander? What is his story? Because he doesn't age. He hasn't changed. And it's like
he's a wizard.
He's one of these actors where you could say, like, we need a Ted McGinley type. And you know exactly who you're talking about, because he, like you said, he specialized in playing those parts. He's great in this movie.
He's got one of those paintings up in his attic that's like super old. That's what it is. Like Paul Rudd. Like Paul Rudd. Like Rob Lowe. They just don't get any older. What do we think about Betty and the actress who plays Betty? Has she done anything else other than this movie?
She did one of the sequels.
Yeah.
And I know I bowed out after part two, which I saw a lot on cable as a kid because it was, I think, PG-13 and therefore could be shown a lot more than the original could. And she's not in that one, but I want to say, I think then they went to like straight to made for TV sequels. And I feel like she's in one of those.
Mm. Yeah, any of the sequels. I don't even think I saw the second one.
It's not great. Although Ogre is in there now.
Yeah. What about Timothy
Bus? Ogre's a nerd in the other one?
He becomes a nerd in part two.
In the second one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he hangs out with them. What about Timothy Busfield as Poindexter? I remember him from 30-something.
Yeah.
And they gave him these goofy glasses, and all of a sudden, he's a nerd.
I love that everyone, they go all in on these performances.
Yeah.
No one's holding back. Like, They're all really good. I know we were singling out like Lewis and stuff, but I actually think Poindexter's a really great character.
Yeah, I think he's hilarious.
I like when he dances.
All the characters are like, again, you know, Takashi is the victim of a stereotype, and Lamar is the victim of several stereotypes. But like, again, if you can sort of remove some of that, they are all great, memorable characters that managed to stand out even given limited screen time. I mean, it's a really good ensemble, and it's easy to say, you know, who's your favorite, even though everybody's favorite is Booger because he's the best, but like it would be easy to pick different favorites. And if somebody said my favorite is Poindexter, I would say, oh yeah, no, I totally get that. You know, I don't know that anybody's picking Wormser.
Oh, there's a child in there. What is he doing there?
I don't know.
What does he add to it? I mean, sometimes I'm like, I'm creeped out that there's a 10-year-old in the room.
He looks so much like my brother did when he was young. And I think it was a comparison that people made even at the time. Like, hey, you look like that guy Wormser from the movie. And my brother, I think, listens to this podcast. So hi, Chris, and I'm sorry for ratting you out like that. Obviously, he outgrew that stage, and now he looks like Ogre. No, not really. But so when I watch Wormser, I'm just like, oh, well, there's Chris. So I barely watch him as a character, but he does do a pretty sweet moonwalk at the end of the movie.
He does.
Okay, the one dance sequence, he's pretty good there.
He redeems himself. So Betty, as played by Julia Montgomery, does appear in both of the made-for-TV sequels, Revenge of the Nerds 3, Next Generation, and Revenge of the Nerds 4, Nerds in Love, wherein she is married to Lewis.
Oh, okay. Well, it all worked out then.
They have a weird story about how they met, sure, but
maybe it's like the weirdest How I Met Your Mother episode ever.
Still better than that show's finale.
I only saw that show's finale. I'd never seen one episode, and I just decided to check it out. It was garbage.
Yeah. It was way worse if you sat through like 8 seasons
waiting
for that reveal, and then they did what they did, which was, as you said, garbage. Did you guys know that this was, they made a pilot for a Revenge of the Nerds TV show?
No.
They sure
did not know that.
Did. It starred Rob Stone, who was the older brother on Mr. Belvedere.
Belvedere.
Yeah.
I wish I didn't know that, but I
know. Here's a second Rob Stone fact. I only know 2 Rob Stone facts. He is the basis of the Jason Schwartzman character in Funny People. The guy who's like on a shitty sitcom but won't stop talking, like leaving his checks out and stuff.
I have a
Rob Stone story? Oh my gosh, this is what I'm here for.
This is through Doug Benson's podcast. He talks about it all the time. But they were roommates just before the Mr. Belvedere thing happened. And Doug Benson said one day he came home and Rob came home early from the set. And he says, hey, man, why are you coming home? He goes, well, you're not going to believe this. But what was the actor's name who played Mr. Belvedere?
Christopher Hewitt?
Yes. He said he accidentally sat on his balls.
Yeah, that's like a weird – that's a famous story. That's a famous story that Mr. Belvedere sat on his balls.
And had to go to the hospital.
Yeah. That's why they changed the name of the show. It used to be Mr. Belvedere. They had to change it. Anyway, yeah, Rob Stone was on the Revenge of the Nerds pilot. I want to say the entire first episode, maybe it's just the opening, exists on YouTube, or at least it did at one point. And then they also remade the movie, or started to, in like 2007, 2006. And they shot for 2 weeks, and it was not going great, and they were unimpressed by what they had, and so they just killed the production, and that was the end of that. But Adam Brody from The O.C. was supposed to be on it. Kristen Cavallari.
Ugh.
Yeah. Perhaps playing the Betty role. I don't know.
Yeah.
Jenna Dewan, nay Tatum, was in it. Dan Bird from Cougar Town. So it had like a lot of recognizable people in it. And somewhere there's two weeks worth of footage for the Revenge of the Nerds remake that, but how do you make Revenge of the Nerds now?
I was just going to
ask
that.
You don't.
Because nerds are cool now.
Exactly.
Right.
They're totally accepted. At least that's what I tell myself.
Listen, you're on one of many podcasts that you appear on,
I'm totally cool, right,
in addition
you guys?
In addition to your own, in addition to guesting on other ones, now you're guesting on this one, and so it's like, people are listening to you, people are fans of you, the nerds have won, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yay, nerds!
Because yay. We're here to, and yeah, you'd kind of have to make them something else, right? I mean, not conventional like nerds who are smart. Although I will say, I teach a speech class, and we do this exercise about stereotyping, and so it's like I name a profession or like a type of person, and I say, okay, describe what this person looks like, and every time I say straight A student. All of my students start in on like really negative, like nothing they say is positive. And sometimes they're describing a nerd that they've seen on Saved by the Bell. And sometimes they're just describing like somebody who there's no positive association. So for some reason, there's still this stigma about, I don't even know if it's being a nerd because, you know, if you watch any late night talk show where an actor is on to promote some comic book movie or they're in, they'll always say, oh, I'm a total nerd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. We get it. You saw Star Wars. Whoa.
You like Black Panther. Woo.
Yeah, right. You and everyone else in the world.
Right.
Nerd. Yeah, but there does still seem to be some sort of idea that there are people who are nerds and not in a good way.
Every year at the Halloween Spirit Store, somebody texts me a photo of the nerd costume and they say, like, there's a Sonya costume here.
Oh my gosh.
So there you go. Nerds are still a thing.
No, it's also like, you think about it, that just popped in my head, but this whole college scandal thing where people are, you know, bribing to get their children into schools, like really famous people. It's like, it's almost not enough to be super smart. You also have to be good at sports, or you have to be good at music, or you have to, like, it's not well-rounded enough to just be smart. Like, you're deficient in that way. It's kind of weird.
Well, yeah, you have to have, you know, 100 hours of volunteer service.
Yep.
As well as being a part of 3 clubs and 1 sport, and you have to have a 4.0 GPA. Yeah, well, because we're trying to raise superhumans.
How's that going for us, by the way, America?
Yeah, yeah. It's going great. And meanwhile, you know, all you have to be is rich and you can still get into a good school.
That's all. Yeah. Was anybody's college experience like they saw in Revenge of the Nerds? Because mine wasn't.
No, I went to San Jose State. It was, I mean, they had parties, but it was nothing like they have here.
Because I went to a party school, but I'm, you know, maybe these sort of things were happening. And I just wasn't invited, but it didn't seem like it was this crazy.
Nothing about my college experience has ever been approximated in a movie at all.
Same here.
Yeah. And nor would I want it to be. Again, I didn't grow up necessarily thinking that looks fun. I want to do that.
Yeah, same.
So it all terrifies me. Why do you guys think that this movie is held to not that it's held to a different standard. I don't think that people shouldn't be calling out the stuff that's problematic in the movie. But I do feel like it's now the first thing that comes up when somebody mentions it. It was weird because a couple weeks ago we were doing F This Movie Fest. And we were watching Ferris Bueller, and there was all this pushback against Ferris Bueller about, oh, he's an asshole.
Right, what an asshole he is.
Self-entitled, and oh, who is this fucking Ferris Bueller kid? And that was the first time, not the first time that I became aware of that, but it was the first time I'd seen it sort of unfolding in real time, because when I programmed that movie, I was like, well, that's a no-brainer. Everybody loves Ferris Bueller, right? Turns out, no. And and now when Revenge of the Nerds comes up, I don't think anybody is willing to say, oh yeah, I've seen that movie so many times, I really liked it, or it's funny, or I really like a lot of the characters. It has to be like, oh, that movie, ooh, yeah, problematic. And we certainly led with that too. I'm not above it. I'm a hypocrite, yeah. I recognize. But why do you suppose this movie, more than, say, even 16 Candles, as you pointed out, Sonia, like, why is this movie held up as sort of the poster child for what was wrong with 80s comedies?
I think it has the actual rape there. Like, it's pretty front and center and used as a joke. And by the way, it's used as to woo her, you know, like I said, to dickmatize her, like just to change her into another person. And it was something we had I don't know how to explain it, but just something we were all okay with. People loved Breakfast at Tiffany's for years and weren't bothered by Mickey Rooney.
Yeah.
And like nowadays, like I want to vomit when I see him on that screen. It's, I don't know. All of a sudden it's sort of the worm turns and you see the world differently.
I think it's because of the message of the movie, the idea that it's about tolerance and understanding each other. And it doesn't extend that necessarily to the women in the movie.
Yep.
That's my theory anyway. I think it's trying to be like, we're all the same. We're all nerds on the inside, or we're all jocks on the inside, whatever. But the women in it really are kind of objects, and, you know, there's the peeping Tom aspect. There's the sexual assault. Like, I mean, I guess Judy comes out pretty unscathed. Judy would be so disappointed to know that Gilbert went on a panty raid. She would break up with him.
Oh, she'd dump his ass. When they were all watching the TV and everything, like all that, yeah, she would not be okay with it.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, there do seem to be like, okay, there's these women who we want to have sex with because they're the cheerleaders and they're the popular ones, and we're going to spy on them and whatever. And then there's these other women who like, oh, we don't want them, but I guess we'll settle.
Yeah.
Well, I forgot about the Wonder Joints. Like that's what changes the
tune. Oh, that's right.
And
yeah,
I actually do like that scene, by the way, when they're playing Thriller. Okay, we're getting even more problematic, but yeah, they're playing Thriller, right? And then they're dancing around, and all of a sudden it just kind of loosens up. I still love that scene, by the way.
The only thing that could make that scene weirder is if they all stopped to talk about Woody Allen. Have you guys seen this movie, Purple Rose of Cairo? It's really good. Yeah, I'm such a Woody Allen fan. Turn Thriller up. Yikes.
Yikes.
Gosh, well, so no, and we can't even talk about the sequels because we haven't seen them. I was wondering,
I only saw the second one, and didn't it have a theme, Rockin' the Paradise? By 38 Special?
Take Take Me Back to Paradise, I think is what it was called. But yeah, it definitely had like a hit song. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Gilbert is barely in it. I think he shows up for one scene and then he shows up later in the movie as like a Yoda spirit to give some advice to Gilbert to Lewis, who is not dating Betty at this time. He's dating Courtney Thorne Smith instead.
Oh, maybe Betty finally realized that he was the one selling naked pictures of her at the carnival.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's something really gross about Ted McGinley when he wipes the what appears to be shaving cream off of the tin and says, "That's my pie." Like, oh, this was already gross and now you just made it grosser. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. What about Tekashi when he's taking pictures at the party? Hair pie? Thank you.
Yeah, right?
Oy. I got sneezes on right now.
The racism towards Tekashi is so awful in this movie. Like, it's wait for them to use a gong, like, every time.
They literally give him a gong at the end of the movie. Yeah.
But they also put an Indian headdress on him, which you can't do.
I'm like, what's that about? It's
so
weird.
It's so
weird.
There's no point to it, but
when we talk about some of these moments, I'm like, oh boy, they really do just stack the problematic on top of itself. Like, let's see, we give the Asian guy a gong. What could be more fucked up? Ooh, I know, headdress.
A war paint on his face.
Yeah, right.
Nice move, 80s.
Yikes.
So weird. That's so 80s.
I don't know. It's and yet, you know, I do feel like this is still, I won't say a beloved film, but it's still a movie that's talked about in the conversation of memorable standout 80s comedies, especially sort of the party, college, everyone get laid variety, you know, which isn't, to this movie's credit, that's not its entire reason for being. Think about how many 80s movies were made about, like, let's have sex. And that is certainly an aspect of this movie and leads to some of the bad stuff that we're talking about. But ultimately, this movie has much greater things on its mind than just the pursuit of sex. And I have to give it credit for that.
I'm looking forward to buying the Blu-ray of Let's Have Sex. That'll be a really good movie.
Let's Have Sex didn't really hit their stride until like part three. Because that's when I feel like they kind of had the formula down. And
I'm going to get the box set and I'll just start with three.
Yeah, that's probably the way to do it.
There's still like just genuinely funny scenes. I forgot John Goodman's in this movie as the coach.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, when one scene where like all their jocks are on fire and they run away to the showers and he just, shit, we forgot to practice. I think that's hilarious. There's some really funny jokes here.
That is good. And I do like the whole, the sort of subplot with I guess he'd be the dean, like the guy who clearly sees himself as a nerd, but is unable to stand up to John Goodman, that this sort of dichotomy continues to play itself out beyond college, you know, even though they're technically still at college, but, I thought that was kind of a nice touch, too.
And I liked at the end when they're playing We Are the Champions and, like, the band shows up, the marching band, and, like, all the different subsets of nerds kind of get together. I always thought that was really sweet.
It is. I love the speech at the end, the, like, yeah. I'm a nerd and I'm here tonight to stick up for the rights of other nerds. You know, that, you know, we're not all going to be free until nerd persecution ends. Like, I like that stuff.
Yeah, me
that's
too.
That's good stuff. I really like it.
Anything else about the movie that you guys want to chime in with? Or do we pretty much say everything there is to be said about Revenge of the Nerds?
I just kind of miss when nerds were inclusive. And they weren't like angry white Star Wars fans who hate women and minorities.
Yeah, when did that happen? Like, how did it return to that? But yeah, you're right, with the incels and all that crap.
Yeah, I didn't even really put that together, that this movie finds them welcoming everyone and that now it's all about gatekeeping, as the kids say.
Mm-hmm. And women and minorities, like you said.
Right. Wow.
Good times.
Yeah. What a fun note to end on. Just remember, the world is shit.
So good. I'm so good at this.
It didn't solve the goddamn thing. Bye.
Well, yeah, you know, unfortunately, we're so busy demonizing Revenge of the Nerds for the bad things that it includes and says that we never sort of point to some of the positives that are still there with that are still in the movie, you know, because we kind of can't get past. I don't think anybody wants to be the one to say, oh, yeah, no, there's a ton of ugliness, but, you know, I don't know. Anyway, this was super fun, and I'm super happy that I was able to have both of you on. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Can you tell us where to find? Is that a drinking thing too, or is that just a?
No.
Okay. Can you tell us where to find you guys online, please?
Well, you can find Dorking Out at dorkingout.com, and we're on Twitter and Facebook, mainly Twitter, and you can find me at thesoniashow.com and on Twitter at thesoniashow.
And you could find me at Brooklyn Fit Chick on Twitter, and that's also my blog.
And on most other podcasts you listen to.
Yes.
Including this one.
Yes. Including this, yes.
And this was a huge, huge honor and a moment for me. So thank you so much for inviting me, Patrick.
Oh,
I really
my gosh.
Appreciate
Please
it.
Come back anytime. We'll do the Real Genius Show.
I will be back next week.
Okay, yay. I don't know what the show is, but
we're moving to
Chicago. Time to talk about Police Academy.
Anyway, thank you guys very much. Thanks for listening, and everybody listen to Dorking Out, and we'll see you guys next week.
Nerds, 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 nerds.
Your words hurt, Sonia.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.